Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate. So there's a verse in Brahma Samhita goes, you can sing it with me if you want. Ramayana Mutishukala Niyamena Tishtan Nana Avatara Makarobu Vaneshikintu Krishna Soyam Samabhapurama Pumanyo Govindamari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. And in this verse they're talking about all the different incarnations of Krishna, so why don't we start? Just raise your hand if you can give me one incarnation of Krishna. Yes. Nisringadev. Yay. Yes.
Korma.
Korma. Yes.
Varaha.
Varaha. Yeah. Kalki. Okay, good. Yes. Behind you and then you. Go ahead.
Parshuram.
Okay.
Buddha.
Buddha? Vamana. Okay, wow, you guys are quite good. So, any more? Anybody else? Yes.
Matsya.
All right, we have them all. Yes.
Rama.
Ram, okay. And it's interesting that each of these incarnations, they all come with a specific purpose. And of course, the purpose, we're going to discuss the purpose that why Lord Varaha came. You know, some of the incarnations, they come because of their beauty, like Balaram, Mohini Murti, one of the main reasons was to exhibit the beauty, and we see our own Lord Balaram. Sometimes it was to display Krishna's fame, because Krishna is the original. All the incarnations, they emanate from him, but each one has a purpose. So in this story of Lord Varaha, it actually begins with the four Kumaras, you know, all dressed as little boys, and they want to go see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And what happens when they try to? Yes, what happens?
The doorkeepers.
Right, the doorkeepers, what do they do? Yes.
They don't let them in.
They say, oh, I'm sorry, you're too small, you're too little. Come back later when you're more grown up. And so Kumaras, they didn't appreciate that, and they cursed him. And I thought it was interesting that when he cursed him, Supreme Personality God himself came, because it says when your servants make a mistake, that the master should take some of the responsibility for that. So Krishna came and said, oh, I'm sorry that Jai and Vijay, you know, made this mistake. Please forgive them. So they forgave them in a way, but still the curse was made, so they had to be executed. So they got to have a choice. They could either be demons for three births, or devotees for seven births. So they talked about it. Well, what about this? What if that would be nice to be devotee, but that's so long. And we want to come back to our original positions being gatekeepers, and that would only take three births. They're like, okay, we're going to do that. And there's another reason that they took birth as demons. Does anybody know why? It was something to do with what Krishna really likes to do, yes. To get killed by Krishna, yes. That's good, yes. What?
Me?
Yeah.
I think because they wanted to not stay in Kali,
you
got that wrong.
That's a good one, too. And also is because everything that we like to do is because Krishna likes to do it. No, Krishna likes to dance, we like to dance. Krishna likes to sing, we like to sing. Krishna likes to take prasadam, we like to take prasadam. Krishna also likes to fight, you know? So not everybody can fight with Krishna. So what happens is that Jai and Vijay, they take birth at a very inauspicious time due to how they were conceived. And because of that, there were a lot of symptoms when they were born. Like if you see these symptoms at a birth, you have to be, it happened when Duryodhan was born also. So there was earthquakes, there were volcanoes, there were torrents of rain, lots of wind. The donkeys were braying, all owls were screeching. And cows, instead of giving milk, were giving blood. So this was a sign. So Diti, who was a mother, she actually got scared, and she thought, oh my gosh, if this is what's happening, they're not even born yet. She tried to keep him in her womb for like 100 years. She managed to do that. But then they took birth, and they were twins. One of them's name was Hiranyakashipu, and the other one was Hiranyaksha, who we're going to speak about today. And we all know the story about Hiranyakashipu and how he performed so many austerities. And Hiranyaksha was shared the boon. So they both had this boon of being super strong. So it said they had steel-like frames. Their bodies were so strong. And they were so big, they could practically block out the sun. You know, they could practically block out the sun. And everyone was super afraid of them. You can imagine. Like when Hiranyaksha, he decided to go to the heavenly planets and harass the demigods, guess where the demigods were? Yeah, they ran away. And he was like, ha, 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 just see, you know. Everybody's afraid of me. I'm so wonderful. I was actually going to read a little section here. Because I think it's not that little, but I thought it would be really good. I thought it would be interesting. Okay, so, and parallel to all this happening, you know, Lord Brahma, who was the first person in the universe, and Hiranyaksha, the first demon in the universe, and Lord Brahma, during the creation, he realizes that the earth had fallen into the Garbhodak Ocean. That's a big problem. Like the Garbhodak Ocean takes up like half of the universe, and the rest are the planets. And the earth was one that fell down. And it explains that the reason that it fell out of its orbit. Does anybody know why it fell out of its orbit? This is very serious because Hiranyaksha, Hiranya means gold. And demons love gold because the more gold they have, the more money they have, the more they think they can enjoy. And so he was digging for gold, more and more and more gold. But what happened is the earth has a very delicate balance. You know, there's certain ethers and air that actually Lord Varad controls gravity. So when this is disrupted, the earth can fall. So that's why some of our environmentalists today, they're worried that what can happen to the earth. Because right now we see many kind of inauspicious symptoms on our planet. Can anybody think what some of those symptoms are? Some of the inauspicious symptoms, yes. I couldn't hear. What? Oh, animals, right. That's right. Good. Very good. Yes, Hari.
Murder.
What?
Murder.
Okay, lots of crime, right? Yes.
We got some over here.
Okay.
Droughts, floods.
That's right. Yeah, all of those things, like in Utah, where there's been the salt like forever, seemingly like bottomless. They said if drastic actions aren't taken, that it will be gone in 5 years. So that's pretty serious. What were you going to say, honey?
Air pollution.
Air pollution. Yes.
Hurricane.
Yeah, lots of storms, right? And sometimes, like in California, there's like a big flood, and then there's like a drought and just kind of goes back and forth. So this is what was happening. Yes? All of that, yes, all of that. So the earth fell into the ocean, and Lord Varaha, the way it happened is Lord Brahman, he'd been meditating, he'd been breathing in, it said he's breathing in the Vedas, right? Because Lord Krishna was instructing him. So he's breathing in, and all of a sudden when he breathes out, what is this? He looks, and there's a little boar. It says the upper, not even the whole thumb, the upper portion of the thumb. That's how big the boar is. And all of a sudden, it flies up into the sky and becomes as big as an elephant or bigger. But very, very beautiful. Generally, we don't think of boars as being very beautiful. If you ever take a walk in the Progress Center, you might see some boars, and they're pretty ugly, really. But Lord Boar was like super beautiful. So let me just read a little bit of this. So Hiranyaksha, he dives deep into the Garbhodak ocean just as a wrathful elephant might dive into a river. He moved about in the ocean for many years and smote the gigantic wind-tossed waves again and again with his iron mace. Then he terrified all of the sea's inhabitants. Finally, he reached the city of Vibhavari, which lies within the Wadra kingdom, and that's the capital of the demigod Varuna. So he falls at Varuna's feet, it says, in false humility. So, oh, Varuna, it's so wonderful to see you, but actually thinking, I'm gonna destroy you. He said, you are the guardian of an entire sphere and a ruler of wide fame. Having crushed the might of many arrogant and conceited warriors, you are fit to be worshipped by the rare and lavish Rajasuya sacrifice. So basically, he wanted to fight with Varuna, but Varuna says, he's mad that this demon is coming and trying to interrupt what he's doing. But it said he curbs his anger, and that's a very good thing to do with your anger, because the three gates leading to hell are anger, lust, and greed. So when you feel anger arising, it's always good to think a little bit first before you do anything, before you say anything. So Varuna wanted to just like yell back at him, but instead he just said, oh dear one, we've now desisted from warfare, having grown too old for combat. Besides, you're so skilled in the arts of war that I do not see anyone but Lord Vishnu who is worthy to meet you in battle. Therefore, you should seek him without delay. I'm sure you will then be rid of your pride at once and will lie down in the battlefield surrounded by dogs for eternal sleep, just to exterminate wicked fellows like you and show his grace to the virtuous. The Lord assumes various incarnations, and as such, Varaha the divine boar. The demon laughed. Ha ha, so when he sees Lord Varaha, oh amphibious beast, oh fool, oh lowest of the demigods in the form of a boar, just listen to me. This earth planet is entrusted to us, the residents of the lower regions, and you cannot take it from my presence without being punished by me, you rascal. You have been nourished by our enemies just to kill us, and you have managed to kill a few demons by remaining invisible, but your power is only a sham, oh fool. Today I shall enliven my kinsmen by smashing your skull with my mace. Although Hiranyaksha's shaft-like words pained Lord Varaha, he tolerated the pain without reacting, for he saw that the earth was on the end of his tusk, was frightened to falling. And this is an interesting part too, because Lord Varaha had an intimate relationship with the earth, and he wanted to get the earth away from Hiranyaksha as quickly as possible. So he picked the earth up on his tusks and held it there, and he ran away and set it down on the Garbhodak ocean very lightly, where it could stay while he was fighting with the demon. But the demon thought he was running away, so he calls him a coward. Let me see here. As the Lord rose out of the water, the demon chased him, roaring like thunder. Are you not ashamed to flee? But then again, what could shame a shameless wretch like you? Lord Varaha placed the earth within his sight on the surface of the water and transferred his own energy to her so she could float. While the enraged Hiranyaksha looked on, Brahma sang the Lord's praises, and the other demigods showered flowers upon him. With the earth now safe, the Lord turned to Hiranyaksha, laughed mockingly, and began to vent his own terrible anger. Oh, mischievous one, I'm indeed an amphibious beast, and I'm seeking to kill hunting dogs like you. I have no fear from your lousy talk, for you're bound up by the laws of death. You're said to be the commander of many soldiers, so now you can take prompt steps to conquer me. Give up all your foolish talk and slay me. A proud man is but an ass if he fails to fulfill his promised word. So, thus challenged by Lord Varaha, Hiranyaksha trembled in anger like a cobra. He hissed, all his senses shaken by wrath. He sprang upon the Lord and struck his chest with his huge mace, but the Lord easily dodged the blow. Again and again, the demon rushed the Lord, brandishing his mace and biting his lip in rage. Then with his own mace, the Lord struck the enemy right temple. But also an expert fighter, the demon used his mace to block the blow. After some time, Brahma and his associates came to see Lord Varaha's fight for the earth. Brahma said, my dear Lord, This demon Hiranyaksha has harassed and terrorized the demigods, the brahmanas, the cows, and innocent people whose only refuge is your lotus feet. Since I awarded him a boon, he has simply wandered throughout the universe looking for a worthy opponent. My dear Lord, please do not play with this most wicked and arrogant serpent any longer, for he's very skilled at conjuring up tricks. My dear Lord, you're unconquerable, so please kill him immediately. So, you know, the Lord does that sometimes. Lord Nrisimhadeva did it too. He kind of played with Hiranyakashipu before he actually came in for the kill. So this is what Lord Varaha is doing. But, you know, Lord Brahma was watching, Manu was watching, Marichi was watching, the Brahmas were watching, and they're a little scared. They're a little scared as what's happening. As the Sudarshan disc whirled, oh, here it says, when he heard Brahma's anxious words, Lord Varaha laughed heartily and accepted his prayer with a glance laden with love. Hiranyaksha was stalking fearlessly before him, so the Lord sprang at the demon and aimed his mace at his chin, but the demon knocked the mace from the Lord's hand, sending the splendid weapon whirling into the sea. A cry of alarm arose from the assembled crowd of demigods and sages, but their worst fears proved ill-founded, for although Hiranyaksha had an excellent chance to strike the Lord, the demon respected the law of one-to-one combat and put aside his own mace. This further kindled the fury of the Lord, who then invoked his Sudarshan disc, the supreme weapon. So the Sudarshan disc whirls in the Lord's hands, and as the Lord confronted Hiranyaksha, the onlookers cried, "May you win the victory, please finish him." When the demon saw the Lord standing before him with the Sudarshan disc, his anger exploded. Again he hissed like a serpent and bit his lip hatefully. For some time he stared at the Lord with burning eyes, then suddenly he took up his mace once more, hurled it at the Lord, screaming, "You are slain!" But the Lord playfully knocked the mace down with his left foot. There's something about the left hand, you know, Krishna holding up his Govardhan Hill with his left finger, and here kicking away the mace with his left foot, because it's generally the weaker foot. Even though it had come upon him with the force of a tempest. Then the Lord told the demon coolly, "Take up your weapons and try again, eager as you are to conquer me." Hiranyaksha retrieved his mace and with a loud roar hurled it at the Lord, but the Lord stood his ground firmly and caught the mace with the ease of a large hawk snatching a mouse. The demon then used such wizardry against Lord Varaha that the onlookers, filled with alarm, in an instant fierce winds blew from all directions and spread dust and darkness everywhere. Stones came in volleys from every corner as if thrown by machine guns. Lightning and thunder-filled clouds covered over the luminaries in the sky, and pus, hair, blood, feces, urine, and bones rained down. Mountains discharged all kinds of weapons. Naked, loose-haired demons appeared with raised tridents, but once again the Lord released his Sudarshan disc and dispersed all the demons' magical forces. So that is one of the mystic powers, that someone can do that, create this magic. Does anyone remember another time when this was happening? When Allah, all these things were raining from the sky? Does anybody remember? It's like Dhruva, when Dhruva was having his fight with the Rakshasas, and all of these things were happening. But again, it was all illusion. So in some ways, that applies to our lives too. Has anyone been in a situation where they thought their life was just terrible and they could hardly go on because everything just seemed so bad? Maybe you're too young for that, but it can happen, you know? But if you always remember that it's actually all illusion. You know, it's actually all illusion, because we're really not these bodies. We're spirit souls. So no matter what happens, that soul, it can never be harmed, right? It can't be harmed by wind or rain or any kind of weapon. Nothing like that. Okay. When Hiranyaksha saw all his apparitions dispelled, he became once again before Lord Varaha. This time he put his arms around the Lord to crush him. But to his amazement, he found the Lord standing outside his clasp. So he goes to crush him, but all of a sudden he looks and he's not there, he's outside. So a little bit of a, what's going on here? Finally, the demon struck the Lord with his stone-like fist, and at that time the Lord slapped him at the root of the ear. Though the Lord had struck him indifferently, Hiranyaksha's body wheeled, his eyeballs bulged out of their sockets, His arms and legs shattered, and he fell down dead like a gigantic tree uprooted by the wind. Haribo! And the funny thing about is that how easily Lord Vara was able to do that, how easy it was for him to be able to dispel and kill him. The demigods were overjoyed. All obeisance is unto you. You've assumed the form of a boar to maintain the world. And fortunately for us, you have slain this demon Hiranyaksha, who was a torment to the three worlds. Now, O Lord, we become happy under the shelter of your lotus feet. We know that you will always protect those who are devoted to you. So there's actually, Bhaktisiddhanta, he established a temple of Bhu Varaha, because after this whole incident, Lord Bor marries the earth planet. And they actually have a son, and his son's name is Bhomasura. And he was very, very saintly son. You can imagine, you know, being born from Lord Varaha. But there was a problem. The problem with this son is that he fell into bad association. He associated with someone named Maya Danava, who was very materialistic. So that's something to learn here, that with all of the good instruction that you grow up with, right? So many, you get to associate with so many nice devotees. You have teachers who are devotees who become, you know, lifelong friends. Like sometimes I'll see a student, a devotee or non-devotee that I haven't seen in so many years, but we'll see each other and go, oh my gosh, you know, hey, how are you? How's everything going? So that's really something very special. Like I never had that in my life. You know, I had so many different teachers, but I really never had a relationship with them after, you know, I left their school. So all that good association, but if when you get older and you become more independent, if you have association from someone who's not, you know, I'm not saying that all non-devotees are bad people, but I'm saying if someone's very materialistic, it can have an effect on you. In fact, in one of the purports, Prabhupada was saying that generally we think of demons like, you know, Agasura and Kaliya, right? So many ugly, ferocious demons, you know, Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu. But really, the difference between a devotee and a demigod is that a devotee, he depends on everything from Krishna. He's dependent on Krishna. Whereas a demon, he doesn't depend on Krishna. He depends on money, largely, and sense gratification. So a demon may look perfectly wonderful, you know, handsome, beautiful, got a big, huge mansion, bunch of, you know, 10 cars, Lamborghinis, the whole nine yards, but he doesn't depend on Krishna for his happiness. So he can't totally be happy. And then at the time of death, can you take the Lamborghini and the big mansions and all your money with you? Can you? No, you can't take it with you. It's all gone. So by the same token, you know, a devotee may be wealthy, that's good. But then there's devotees who don't have much money. And that's also it's totally okay. Because a brahmana, he depends on Krishna for everything. Just like when Lord Varaha appeared out of Brahma's nose, at first, Lord Brahma was like, oh, you know, how curious this is. And then when he saw him fly up in the sky, his tail slashing and growing and growing and growing, he thought, wait a minute. This is wonderful. This is incredible. This has to be something to do with the Supreme Person of Godhead. Nothing could be this wonderful and not be connected with the Supreme Person of Godhead. Just like there's a verse in Bhagavad Gita, Tata Vibhuti Satvam Srimad Urjitam Evava, that all beautiful, mighty, and glorious creations, they spring but from a spark of my splendor. So I thought that was interesting that, you know, we can look at something, just like Prabhupada once said, when a non-devotee looks at a rose and think, oh, let me smell it. Yeah, this smells great. But what does a devotee do when he sees the rose? What does a devotee do when he or she sees the rose? Ragatmika?
Offers it to Krishna.
Yeah, he offers to Krishna first, And then he smells it. So that way, everything's the whole cycle is complete. So that's what we try to do. We try to, you know, always have everything connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and always develop that dependence on Krishna. As I was studying for my class, you know, I run across different lectures by all different people, and one I was reading was with Giriraja Maharaj, and he was talking about demons and devotees, and that when the devotees were trying to get that property in Bombay, all the difficulties they had trying to get it, there was so much opposition. There was rumors that were spread saying, these Hare Krishna devotees from America, they're CIA agents. They're with the mafia. They're just whatever they could say terrible about. They're criminals. They're this, they're that. They were all trying to get the land away from them. But there was one police chief that came in, and he said to the devotees, do you know why they're giving you so much trouble? And Tamal Krishna said, yeah, I think they're giving us so much trouble because we're from the West. And the police chief said, well, if that was true, there's a lot more Westerners than Holiday Inn. We would be going and searching the Holiday Inn right now, but we're searching you. He said, the reason that they're searching you is because you don't eat meat, you don't drink any alcohol, you don't believe in illicit sex, and they find that to be a challenge to their way of life. They don't like to hear that. They want everyone to be able to, what they call, enjoy. And the fact that you're preaching this, that's why they're having us investigate you. So that was really kind of a wake-up call for them, realizing that. But ultimately, they were able to get the land. Krishna made that arrangement. So just like with Srila Prabhupada, it was really nice on Sunday. Mitra Sena Prabhu was giving a lecture, quite a detailed lecture about Srila Prabhupada and all the trouble he had in coming over to America, all the, you know, the heart attacks, how sick he was. At one point, Prabhupada said, I was sure if there was another heart attack that I would not survive it. You know, they went through storms on the sea, so many difficulties. But just like Lord Brahma had that faith that Krishna would take care of the demon Hiranyaksha and that everything would work out, Prabhupada had that faith in Krishna, and we see what happened. I have a very small story, and forgive me, some of you probably heard this story, but I don't think the kids have heard it, so I'm just going to tell it. When I started the Christmas Marathon, well, it wasn't a Christmas Marathon, it was actually during the summer, and we traveled in a van with Tamahar and Mantrini and two other Bhakta and Bhaktin, distributing books along the way, and we followed Srila Prabhupada, basically. So we would distribute books, and then we'd see Prabhupada. We saw him in, you know, New Vrindavan, and then we saw him in Philadelphia, and then we saw him in New York, and then we saw him in Detroit, and then we saw him in Chicago. So we were really fired up. And then when we came down again, we came to Alabama, Montgomery, Alabama, and we were distributing books, magazines, Back to God magazine, in Montgomery, Alabama. So sometimes in the South, people can be very close-minded. So what happened is one of the Bhakta had gone to get lunch, but myself, Tamahar, and Bhakti and Marsha, they arrested us. Okay, so I'd never been arrested. So we got arrested, and we got put in jail. And it was late enough in the day that nobody could get us out, so I had to spend the night in jail. But luckily, because I'd read so many stories like this, I thought, it's okay, Krishna's going to take care of me. The Bhakti started to cry, so I had to, like, you know, it's okay, everything's going to be all right. You know, you'll see, Krishna will take care. So I spent the night in jail, and the next morning, we had to go to the courthouse, and the judge was there. So when I went in front of the judge asked me, well, what were you doing? I said, well, we're distributing these beautiful magazines. He's like, well, why were you doing that? I said, because we're trying to teach people how important it is to love God. You know, that's really the solution to all the world's problems, all the crime, you name it. And so each one of us, Jayashree Radhe's father, he got up and he spoke. He even asked me, the judge, what did you do before you did this? I said, well, I used to be a teacher. But I felt like this is more important than being a teacher. So Jai Shireti's father, Tamahar Prabhu, he got up and he explained what he was doing and why he was doing it. So by the time we finished, the judge said, you know what? I'm really sorry that you guys got arrested. He said, I'm going to let you go. And if you have any trouble along the way, just call me. I'm going to try to help you out. So, yeah, it was a wonderful experience. So we went back to the mobile home. And if anybody knows Jai Shireti's mother, Montrini, she's one of the best cooks ever. And because we couldn't eat anything for while we were in jail, because it's all disgustingly gross, that we hadn't eaten. And so she had made a big feast for us, you know, everything that you can imagine, you know, grunga potatoes and dahi wadas and, you know, apple, everything. She was just so expert. So we all sat down to eat, and we're all having prasad, and all of a sudden, we hear a knock at the door, and we open the door, and guess who's there? No, not the FBI. The judge and the bailiff. So we're so surprised to see them. So we invite them in. We invite them to come and sit down and have prasadam, which they did. And they loved it. They ate. They were in part of the Clean Plate Club. They ate everything on their plate. And when they were done, the judge got out his wallet. He took out $10. He gave it to us, and he got a Bhagavad Gita. So that story ended. That story had a very... That story had a very nice ending, but, you know, stories don't always end exactly like that. You know, sometimes, you know, let's say, you know, we have a loved one, and our loved one dies, and we're feeling bereft, you know? We're feeling the absence of that association. Even there's prayers of the different Goswamis, and they said when Lord Chaitanya left, you know, they just wanted to beat their head against the wall because they're feeling that separation. But we can find solace in the idea that Krishna is taking care of everyone, you know, especially devotees, and especially those who are related to devotees also. You know, those people, like, you know, even though your grandmother and your grandfather, they may not be devotees, when they leave their bodies because of you, what you've done, that is going to help them on their path back to Godhead. That's going to help to liberate them. So on this path, how does it go? Neha bikramo nashasti patrivayona vijite swapamapyasi dharmasya trayate mahatobayata. On this path, there's no loss or diminution. And even a little advancement on this path can save one from the most dangerous type of fear. So think how you're all in school, and every day you're performing some kind of devotional service, right? What are some of the kinds of devotional service you perform in school every day? Yes. Okay, chant japa every day. That is not just a little step. That's a big step. What else might you do in school every day? Some kind of... What? Just say it out. Read the Gita?
Wake the deities.
Oh, wake the deities. Okay, so there's all that, right? Waking the deities and offering artik and... Yes. Yeah, changing the water. And yes. Yeah, reading Srimad Bhagavatam. And maybe you'd even, you know, make a little book with chapters of the Bhagavatam. I know they used to do that third through fifth grade, where they illustrate their Bhagavatam. They have create their own little book. So all these things are creating eternal advancement on the path back to Godhead for all of you. There's also a pastime of Lord Bhor in Gauralila. And this is kind of interesting, that Lord Chaitanya is listening to the pastime of Lord Bhor and becomes so excited. He goes, Sukara, 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 Sukara. And he runs over to Murari Gupta's house because Murari Gupta is very dear to him. It says, just like Hanuman was dear to Lord Ram, Murari Gupta was very dear to Lord Chaitanya. So he goes into Murari Gupta's house and he goes up to the altar and he sees this beautiful water pot and he takes it and he transforms into Lord Bhor, basically, with hooves, with a snout, and he puts the water pot on top of his nose, and he says, Rari Gupta, offer prayers, offer prayers. Rari Gupta, offer prayers. Rari Gupta, he's like dumbfounded. He can't move. You know, he can't say anything. He's like, oh, you know all the prayers. You say them. I can't think of anything right now, you know. But Lord Chaitanya explains that he did that. He did that exhibition because he wanted everyone to know that Lord Chaitanya and Krishna are none different. And that all these avatars, all these different forms, you know, are all Krishna. Some of them are, plenary portions or empowered portions. But Krishna, of course, he's the original source. So there's a nice verse in Bhagavad Gita. It goes, Ma chitam agata prana bodhayanta parasparam katanyantas chamam nicham tushanti cha ramanti cha. It says, the thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are surrendered unto me. And they derive great satisfaction and bliss by conversing with one another and enlightening each other about me. So this is what we do in Bhagavatam class every day. And in your classes also every day. So sometimes if you're feeling tired or you feel like, well, maybe you'd be rather, you know, playing a game on your computer like that, remember that that game on your computer is not going to contribute one iota to you, to the eternal picture of you going back to Godhead, but that, like what we're doing, has everything for you to do. It may be at the time of death, which we never expect. Just like we heard about this young boy, 13 years old, riding his bike, right, in Gainesville and getting hit by a car. Luckily, the prayers of the devotees and Krishna's mercy, it looks like he's going to pull through. But, it, you know, sometimes people just like that. And so what if, let's say something like that happened today, and immediately you thought, Lord Bore is going to save me. That would be so wonderful. So it's just like soccer. When you're playing soccer, can you just go to, you know, let's just say you've never played soccer before, and you go to the soccer game, and you figure, I'm going to play, I'm going to win. Is that very likely? No. How come? Yes. You never practiced, right? So by the same token, you can't expect... people might say, oh, when I die, you know, I'm gonna go to heaven. But, you know, what does anybody know about the spiritual world in general? We know so much. That's one beautiful thing about our scripture. I mean, there's so many beautiful things. But I remember I wasn't brought up as a devotee, and all I knew about heaven was that there's angels, there's harps, and if it was anything like church, I didn't want to go there because it was just so boring, you know? We didn't get to dance. We didn't get to sing like that. It just wasn't fun. So we have detailed information about, you know, the different forms that God has and all the pastimes that he has. So we wanted to be able to really, you know, take advantage of it, remember, and do the practice. Like Purushottam said, you can't go to a soccer game without practice. And we can't expect to go back to Godhead without really making an effort to become absorbed in Krishna in one way or another. So we're doing this on a regular basis. So I think just another parallel is just like Lord Varaha lifted the planet Earth from the Garbhodak ocean and saved it. Srila Prabhupada has lifted us out of Kali Yuga, right? He just lifted us right up and has given us everything we need to sail on the boat home. So I think I'll stop here. And if anybody has any questions, additions, comments, yes.
So about the whole incarnation thing.
Yeah.
Who destroys the planets and everything? Is it Shiva or is it Kalki? Like, that's a question.
I believe it's Lord Shiva. He is in charge of destruction. Yeah, Kalki's incarnation, he comes, you know, at the end of Kali Yuga, and he destroys the demons, you know? That's what he does. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah, Brahma creates, Shiva destroys, and, I mean, that's a good question, though, because there are certain incarnations that come just to kill the demons. And Kalki is one of them, to kill the demons. Also, Lord Nisringadev, also Parashuram, they all come specifically to kill the demons. So that was a good question. Anybody else have something they'd like to add, subtract? Okay. All right, well, thank you, everyone, for your kind attention. Hare Krishna.